Okay.
Okay, friends.
Here we go.
First of all, again, if you like the show, would you just go leave us a review? Follow us on the things at Flyover Logic Pod and leave us a review wherever you listen.
Yeah, do it.
That's all.
It also is very exciting when you send us messages. It really is.
Yeah.
I didn't share this one with you yet, but a listener had sent me a text recently that they...
Wow.
Your Christian nationalism conversations were excellent. I appreciate you two hashing it out. And I just think, I sent back, I said, thanks. And you have no idea how much that means when we hear things like that.
Yeah.
Even if things you don't like actually is helpful for us. But obviously things that you do like is even nicer.
You know, pat us on the back.
And if you are brave enough, post that type of nice, heartwarming thing in a public space.
Yes.
Because the next step from listening to a show like this is to start
sharing
talking
it.
About it.
Yeah, share it with your
outside
friends.
Of your head.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was great.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks. Do it.
For students who are going through these different stages of development at that age, in many cases, the social experiences that they have at school are the most critical aspects of their development. Mm. I mean, yes, academics, of course. I mean, you need to proceed kind of at a pace. But at the same time, like that pace, it's okay for that pace to be adjusted sometimes. And it's okay to not do so well and then maybe do better at one point, you know? So I don't know, but I do feel that those social aspects are really important.
Welcome, everyone. This is Mike and Tammy back for another round of Flyover Logic. Each episode, we'll give you a brief take on what's got us thinking, what the heck? We'll take a deeper dive into one big topic, and we'll end with sharing something happy, leaving you all with some Minnesota nice.
Sometimes you need a bird's eye view to make sense of the world, and sometimes you need to land the plane and take a look around. We hope to do both and help each other learn something along the way.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
All right.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Tammy. It's wonderful. I'm not complaining about the weather. The other day, I sat in my hammock to read a book when it was 103 feels like temperature because I'm, like, forcing myself to enjoy the deep heat.
All of it.
Yep.
All of it.
And it was great.
Yes.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
Great.
It was a great weekend.
All right.
I love it.
Now what?
All right, what the heck,
What
huh?
the heck?
What do you have?
I got to look at my thing. I forgot now for so long ago. Right. Did you already sneak peek? Did you read all mine? I never know. Okay. Grenoble, is that how you say that? It's French. Grenoble? Grenoble.
It's much better
Whatever.
When you put on a really great accent like that. Yeah.
Which was described as a major French city, which I thought was funny in this article that I read. But anyway, has recently made changes to public pool swimsuit rules. So patrons may now wear full burkinis.
Okay.
Which, if you don't know, is like a burqa, like, it's not actually like a burqa, but it is a head-to-toe
covering.
Swimsuit.
Yeah.
Covers your head all the way down, styled after burqas of people of Muslim faith.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so they made that, they changed the rules. So in public pools, you can now wear them.
So, like, you couldn't.
You couldn't wear them before.
So, like, if I showed up in a bodysuit, they'd
right.
be like,
nope, out of here.
Show more skin.
Which you would think would be good, but the story was more about the fact that everybody lost their minds in France about this. So both far right and far left people are apparently against this, and they're protesting. They are talking to the media. They're doing all kinds of stuff because they don't want people to be able to wear burkinis in their pools. And I just thought, like, what the heck?
I can understand what the far right, like, that argument would be. I can see a little bit more,
so,
like, that makes more sense. What
apparently,
what
like, in 19-something, early 1900s, there was
something.
A French law that was passed that was intended to divide church and state. So that, okay, that you're actually not allowed in public spaces to like wear things or do things that are overtly religious.
Okay.
And so the French apparently are deeply committed to their secularism.
Okay.
And so the far left people who are up and hot and bothered about this believe that it is a violation of that secularism.
Interesting. Because, okay.
But it's only, the rule only applies to like government spaces. And so this is a public pool, but it's run by the city. And sure. so you can't, anyway. So I just thought this, it's just very complicated and very interesting, but also very dumb. Like what on earth?
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, people are not happy about this new change. And I just, I put it on there partially because I always, Tammy knows, I love to find when other countries are acting like whack jobs so that I can point out that the United States, although exceptional, is not the only crazy place in town.
We are not the only place that has the people that go bananas over things.
No. Also, I think just on a comfort level, I would hate to wear a head-to-toe swimsuit covering. Like, that doesn't seem cool to me at all. But if that's there. And I do think that there is some interesting conversations, right, to be had about it. Like, if you are someone who is a more liberalized type person, the burqa is very polarizing, and it's a little bit complicated because on one hand, yes, it's like we support your religious freedom and your ability to express yourself, but it's really hard to not get sort of dragged into a conversation about, because most of the time when they have these, they'll interview Muslim women and they're like, you know, our husbands don't make us do this. They, you know, we do this because we want to, because we want to. But if you dig deep enough, the idea that they, that a religion teaches that they need to protect their modesty by literally covering their entire body.
Yeah.
There is some problematic elements to that in a liberal society where, like, I think it's so that it gets a little bit
like, where's the line of we need to fight to free you from your oppression versus your freedom of religion?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to wrap your brain around the idea that I want to choose a faith.
Yeah, that would oppress me.
That would, but if I'm choosing it, then I'm not oppressing. Anyway, right. It's very, it's a definite gray area.
This kind of rule, like, how do you police that, right? I'm thinking of,
they literally just kick people out of the pool.
Right. But I'm thinking of like, I don't know why the Duggar family comes to mind, and I don't want to give them any more attention. But
because
like,
they are the closest thing to wearing burkinis that we know.
But like
of.
That kind of fundamentalist, right? Who definitely wears, I don't even like, swimwear that is almost full body covering.
Yep.
So do we not let them wear that either because that's religious? Or like, if I'm, you know, gonna, I don't know, like, how do you draw lines here?
But also that I think that there are many people, and I'm going to point at you, maybe fall in this category, you would be more irritated at the Duggars going to the pool with full body covering than a Muslim family that was wearing burkinis. Like, we are double-sided.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
I think many liberal, I'm using air quotes again, people will be quicker to defend the Muslim women to wear burkinis at the pool than they would to defend the Duggars to wear their full body coverings. We have double standards depending on who we're talking about.
I guess my mind just went to like, how are you going to say what you're wearing is, there's so many different groups here that would have different ideas of what they should or should not wear and how modest they should or should not be. Like,
I agree.
What the hell?
One of the other side things of this story is that there's other groups now that are also pushing for different changes to allow things. And one of them is, they call it a monokini, which basically means you just go topless, which is also not terribly un-European and certainly not un-French, but I just have, I do love the pluralistic idea that there is a city pool where there are women wearing burkinis and topless women, probably smoking, most likely, all sort of
who
mingling
drove themselves there?
In the same pool.
Yes. There you go.
It's a beautiful sight. Anyway. All right. Okay. What do you got?
I just thought we should mention the Texas Republican Party.
I thought you might go there.
Well,
luckily we have 4.5 days to talk about it.
I had a story about some workers at the Hershey plant or at the Mars plant getting rescued from a vat of chocolate.
Nice.
I know, but I thought Mike is going to expect that I should talk about the Texas Republican Party. So the GOP in Texas just adopted a new party platform, specifically says that Biden is just an acting president. He didn't win legally. Texas should vote on seceding. They want to repeal the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So many things in here. What was your favorite part of this new party platform, Mike? Did you find anything that really kind of struck you here?
No.
No.
This is a whole, we should do this. We need to. So we got a couple of different, oh my God.
What the heck?
That's what the heck.
Just what the heck. We need more conversation about this. Is that what you're going to say? Yes.
Yes, we do. Because it would be, I think it would be interesting to sort of also juxtapose a couple of things like what is the Minnesota State Republican Party platform? Because like to understand one that state parties have their own platforms. So they are not, however, Texas is a huge state populist wise. It's also a very... it's a red state, not a moderately red. I didn't mean moderate. They're red. Anyway, so it's like a big deal. It's like California, like it is to Democrats, right?
Sure.
And so it's a big player, but also the current, as I still understand it, the current national party has no platform.
Yeah.
The last time around, they declined to come up with a new one.
Right.
It was just
Trump.
It was literally... If Trump says it, that's the platform.
Yeah. So they'd pretty much be the same thing as what they're doing.
And it is absolutely, yeah, it is. I'm speechless.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Speechless.
I love it when that happens.
I was pissed when you were reading the things off because the tone that you read them off.
Oh, sorry.
No. Because the tone was sort of like, it's where you default to, which was sort of like, isn't this sort of crazy? But like,
it is.
It's actually crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it almost downplays how
it's actually
dangerous this is.
Oh, very dangerous. Yes.
So yeah, that's a whole nother thing. And I don't want to,
I
do want to talk about it, but what the heck?
What the heck? Okay. Ooh,
also, because I got this already. Oh, it didn't work. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I played this for my kids, and they did not appreciate this song. And I thought,
why?
Well, first of all, I was way more excited that school's out than they were. Second of all, I agree now. If you listen to the whole song, it's actually not a very good song. The only thing that's good is that they sang
school's out
for summer, school's out forever.
Yeah.
So anyway, so school's out for the summer. We are doing our second episode on some things education, not all things
not
education.
All things. Mm-hmm.
And we have invited a guest to come on to talk about mental health in schools and what exactly it is that the counselors do.
Jumping right in. We're going to analyze your feelings.
I'm going to lean back.
First thing
relax.
I'm relaxed. Relax. Just try to relax.
What is the metaphor for the broken mic that Mike has?
I don't know.
Are you broken?
Yes, I am.
Your mic is broken. Mike is broken.
Mike is broken. That's step one. All right. So we obviously have a guest in our studio today.
Yes.
We are doing a little series in June here since school is out on all things, not all things, on
some
many things, education. And so we have in our studio Mr. Nate Bailey, who is licensed professional school guidance counselor.
And
no,
really,
no guidance.
No, there's no guidance anymore.
Yep. No
Sorry.
Guidance.
If
no
you're
guidance.
Looking for guidance,
go guidance, elsewhere.
Hey, Bailey, don't go there.
Don't look to me. I have no guidance for you.
No guidance.
I let you guide you.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that sweet?
This is
That's great.
It's going to be thick.
It is, yeah.
All right.
So basically, Mike and I have been complaining a lot about our... Our lack of licensed guidance counselors. No, about like, what's the deal with school right now? Our kids seem a little whatever, you know, whatever. Like, we've been talking about this as we are, you know, professionals on this topic, and thought maybe we should actually have a professional on this topic.
I say, I don't get paid for the parenting. Do you get paid?
Not nearly enough.
No.
I get paid in hugs.
Yeah. I don't take that currency.
That doesn't work.
Yeah. So we had some questions and we're like, hey, let's talk to somebody who actually knows. Yeah.
Someone who's a professional.
Right. Mm. That's possibly not the same thing.
Yeah.
But we'll find out.
We'll find out.
So thanks for coming.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Can you just give us a little bit, that's usually our first question, is give us the nutshell Nate Bailey. Is it Nate? Is it
Nathan? History. I go by Nate. Yeah.
Nate. Okay.
Nate. Yeah.
Give us your little bio. Tell us who.
How'd you get here?
How did I
so
get
so many things?
How did I get in this booth?
You
this
have 90 really weird, seconds.
No, so yeah, I've been a licensed professional school counselor for 7 years now. So not a very big chunk of my career, I guess. I don't know. I guess I'm just realizing suddenly how old I'm getting. Anyway. So prior to me being a counselor, I was I worked for the city of Fargo actually as a city planner, and the work I did there actually.
Whoa! Sorry.
Uh oh.
That just
my
went,
phone just went
no,
off.
No, no,
that
somebody,
no.
Somebody something's buzzed, but like which distracted me. Did you say you worked for the city of Fargo as a city? Okay, now we have a whole other.
Is that weird?
No,
that's weird, isn't it?
It's not weird. I'm super stoked about it.
But also,
we can't talk about that like, right now.
Yeah.
The connection
I've had
here.
A weird life.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So I'm going to write city planner.
Yeah. So, and actually before that, my life has been 7 years of segmented 7 years. I don't know. So 7 years I spent in the state of Vermont.
It's very biblical.
Yeah. It is sort of it's seven. Yeah. I know. I mean, right. So
he's like, the tone made it sound like you didn't actually know. But then when I said it, you're like, oh, yeah. Anyway, to keep going. So you were in Vermont for 7 years.
I guess I have to give you a little history. So yeah. I graduated with a history degree in college. I know this is weird.
Oh, I'll just stop laughing.
Stop laughing. No. So history and philosophy. And then I was really interested in architecture. So I did a master's degree in historic preservation, like, you know, architectural historic preservation when I was in Vermont. And then I ended up working for the state of Vermont in community development. So they had a state organization called the Vermont Community Development Program. And that's probably where my interest in just working with people, you know, who are struggling really started, because that was the granting agent, the state granting agency for the federal CDBG, Community Development Block Grant, which helps people who are low and moderate income with housing and other community resource needs. So, yeah, so I spent 7 years with the state of Vermont doing that work, grant work, and then... My family and I moved to Fargo, which is where I grew up. And I worked with the city of Fargo as a community development planner for 7 years. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about that job was my work with the Fargo Human Relations Commission. I was a staff person for that group and just really got to work with a lot of, you know, really the diverse population of Fargo. And that was, I really enjoyed that. And I think that really kind of triggered an interest in connecting with people. And then during that time as well, I volunteered for the Fargo Public Schools as a city employee. Working as a mentor for a couple of different kids in the elementary schools. So that was a really fun opportunity too. And that really, that probably really was what triggered my interest in school counseling.
Sure.
It's a very different age group.
Yeah.
Elementary, now you're in high school. Like,
yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, totally. Very different. And yeah, I miss that sometimes. I miss working with younger kids. And, you know, because now I'm with all high school and eighth graders too. So
sure.
But yeah, so, and then, okay, and then what happened? Oh, yeah. And then my job basically at the city fizzled. It was eliminated.
Hmm.
Because of reorganization and budget.
I was like,
yeah,
I was not Fargo eliminated. Was like, we got this human rights thing done now. We got that done. Yeah. There's no issues anymore. We don't need you community developers.
Yeah, no, they reorganized and you know, and actually it was pretty nice for me because I really got to I got to think again about what my purpose was, I guess, or what I felt like I wanted to contribute. And so then I went and got a master's degree in school counseling at NDSU, and then you know, got a job here in Fergus Falls, which was really great because and kind of serendipitous, I guess, because we have some family who live in Fergus Falls as well, so we were able to kind of join them and be here. And And yeah, ever since, so 7 years working as a school counselor, it's been great. We really love the community here. It's just a really cool town for my kids to grow up in, and just a good community to be a part of. And yeah, I really enjoy that aspect of my job, which is I just feel like I'm kind of immersed in the community and able to help people out.
Are you done now because you've completed your 7 years?
That's what I was about to ask. So, now I want to be like, all right, so
7 years is
this
done.
Sucks.
7, 7, 7.
I guess he's out of here.
See you guys. No, I'm totally not. This is kind of the, what's the cheesy term? Forever job.
Oh, that's nice.
I really do think this
good
is
for
the
you.
Thing. Yep.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Okay. So we heard you a little bit, like, I'm not a guidance counselor. Don't say that word. So what is it that you actually
What is it that you actually do here?
Evil word.
What is it that you do here?
Yep.
Well, I think there's so much discussion right now about, like, we have to have counselors doing counseling in schools and get the scheduling crap off their table,
yeah.
Right? Like, take that away from them. And so that's what I think of when I think of guidance counselor. It was the person who told you, take these classes so you can go to college.
Yep.
Yeah. So what is it that you do, and why is the word guidance
kind of
icky? Yeah.
Guidance counselor is very much the traditional stereotype. I mean, you see it in television programs.
Right.
You see it in movies, everything, every media. What did I just see the other day? Bob's Burgers, I think. There was a counselor in there. It was just so typical, like, you know, cheesy school counselor, like, hey, man, let's talk about your feelings, you know. And not to say that's not what we do. But so...
Do you use voices at all in your work?
Sometimes, you know. But in the 50s, 60s, I would say, guidance counselors were a big part of the educational system. And they were definitely guidance counselors. I mean, their purpose really was to work with students on preparing them for college, figuring out which college they wanted to go to, and really figuring out what, you know, that big question, what they wanted to be, you know, when they grew up. And obviously those are still important questions.
Mm.
But that was really the focus. Whereas today it's a lot more holistic. We are working with students on, you know, of course, career, academic, a focus, but also mental health, social, emotional aspects of their lives. And so that's just it. And in fact, and we might talk about this a little later too, I mean, just in terms of the pandemic, I think this has brought the mental health piece even more to the light. I would say we focus, I don't know if it's more, I would say it's more heavily, more and more heavily on mental health needs. And I don't, it's not just mental health. It's kind of social and personal, you know, kids that age are obviously going through a lot of growth and development. And so just like when we were growing up and, you know, I mean, it's tough being in middle school and high school, and guidance counselors back in the day didn't really deal with those or work with kids on those issues. Whereas we do as professional school counselors, we do much more today.
Interesting. So how, okay. So you've only been in 7 years. Also, you have some knowledge because you went to school about it. That didn't make the game. I like the history. Like
my training is. Yeah.
No, you gave so like a little history of how it has evolved.
Yeah.
What would you say? Like, do you do like 30% sort of guidance oriented task work, mm-hmm. and 70% like student mental social health, or is it 50-50 or like?
It is really hard to say. And the reason is because, again, I think of the word holistic. Every discussion I have with a student, whether it's career or academic or specifically mental health, it's all mixed together. So if we're talking about something they want to consider doing when they graduate, mm-hmm. whether it's going to school or working, there's always an openness to talking about the mental health aspect of things. Everything, I mean, it's always there. So there's always a willingness to diverge into that discussion. If that makes sense.
Yep.
It's really kind of it all goes hand in hand because you know, kids are learning how to manage their emotions when they're in school. Mm. And I think that's something that we forget and something that I feel is so important to developing themselves into people who are happy and who feel fulfilled. And that, I guess there are other pieces of that. There are things they can't control in their lives, which is going to make it very much difficult for them to feel happy and fulfilled. So that's a whole nother aspect of things that I work with kids on as well.
I think it's really interesting what comes to my mind with what you're saying there is just hearing you say how important it is for kids to learn how to handle these feelings and, you know, mm-hmm. learn what these feelings are and, you know, processing and whatever. And just thinking about some of this debate in, you know, current events kind of spaces lately, that this is not the role of the school. This is at home. Let's get this out of schools. Mm-hmm. And then to your statement about like, you know, some kids are in situations where they have to deal with things that they can't control and like, let's help them figure out. I don't know. I just hearing you say this, like to me, it makes so much more sense to be offering this within the school mm-hmm. so that everybody has access to that and just the importance of that. But it's definitely kind of a hot button
sure.
issue lately, or one of the hot button issues. Why do you think that is? Like, why are people afraid of, oh, like Nate is gonna, you know, yeah. just poison this child if
right.
he talks about feelings?
Yeah. Well, so I mean, nothing can replace what goes on at home and the importance of, you know, parents being essentially the guiding voice in their kid's life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't replace that. Nothing at the school can replace that. But it's such a great thing to have counseling professionals at the school who can address things when they happen at school. I mean, they spend all their days in the wintertime at school. That's where they are. That's where they're experiencing a lot of their feelings. So it makes sense for us to be there as a resource for them. I just think it's really important. One of the things that's so great about, I think, the work that I do is I kind of am in a privileged situation in that students, kids will share with me, and that's why confidentiality is so important. They will share with me things that they just need to get off their chest, or they just need to talk through. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to offer them a completely unbiased, or
neutal.
Yeah, like me.
Neutral.
Yeah.
A neutral position. I don't have any stake in the game. You know, it's I'm able to, because of my position, I'm able to listen and not be. I can be impartial. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's more challenging for a parent. I mean, you grew up, this kid's in your house. You know, I mean, there's it's different. Mm-hmm. And so I think kids really are relieved when they're able to sit down with someone and just have them listen and like nod their head and not interject these inane comments that just, you know, I shouldn't say inane. That's, you know, but that's, that is from a kid's perspective.
Yep.
You know, it's like, oh dad, oh mom, why do you have to always, you know, we don't have to do that. So, but at the same time, we are a role model for them. We're an adult. So we also have to, you know, help them discover the importance of growing into an adult too. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like whatever goes. And there maybe some of the guidance comes into it, you know? I mean, so it's kind of back and forth that way.
I gotta circle back to this. Like, so we talk a fair amount about how our internets aren't the same. When you made a statement about a lot of people talking about getting mental health out of schools, yeah. I've not heard that at all. What I feel like I hear is that everybody agrees we need more. Mm. Like, and
that would be good.
I'm not saying, okay, hold up.
No.
I'm saying
no.
Everybody
yeah,
it would be good
says that they want more, but they don't want to pay for it. You know, there's all kinds of other pitfalls after that, but I don't ever see anybody going like we need to get them out of the schools because that's the parents' job. I have said those words about other things, but not specifically about counseling and mental health. So I'm just sort of interested to get. I want to know more about where you are seeing that.
Well, maybe because I'm married to a dude who sits on the school board. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's fair. Who sits on the school board.
All of those things are all false for me. it very much, I feel like this fall, like we went really quickly from like, we're going to talk about masks first. And then we're going to say like, oh, now it's this. Now it's, and social emotional learning was on that list of like, here's another area that we want to attack. Because there was some sort of fear about like, if we're teaching our kids about feelings, or if we're like, we might be teaching them messages that parents don't agree with,
okay. All right.
Kind
I
of
can,
a thing.
All right. And so, I can see, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. So like it's part of the curriculum, right? Like that we teach about social emotional skills, like, and we start that in elementary school. And so that was the piece, like this should not be something that they're taught from teachers. This should be in the home only.
Sure. I don't want to fall off too far into the rabbit trail, but I think what you're describing is more of a pushback of how we teach social emotional learning inside the regular curriculum, say in science, social studies, whatever it is, versus just straight up like mental, quote unquote, mental health. I'm doing air quotes, mental health.
There's also a separate curriculum.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay. We're,
how does that affect you? I mean, like, so do you actually have curriculum that you do, or do you like, what
do
is
they
the,
still get that in high school? No,
not
yeah.
really.
Yeah. So yeah. you like, you do the schedules, which we already talked about.
Yeah. Yep.
And then kids just show up at your door when they're having a bad time. I know from some
experience
that no, occasionally people? Staff will
that,
reach
I know
out.
That he has toys in his, excuse me, in his office. There's toys.
Dude.
Oh, and yeah. so like, oh,
I used to want to own a toy
I just need a break.
Store.
And so.
Well, 7 years.
Yeah. You know.
You'd make a great retired like toy store owner. Just like.
Well, if you saw my desk, you'd. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It, so anyway. Like how, so how do you do this stuff? Like, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean, kids show up, they're having a rough day and we start a conversation and, you know, to kind of get Tammy to yeah. your point,
Well, he was excited about what you said. All of a sudden, he perked up.
Not only this community, like this was like a much
a
broader
okay.
battle against. Yeah. Here's one more thing that we want out. Yeah. yeah.
So no, we don't really have a curriculum. It's really honestly, yeah. Kids come in, whether it's schedule related. Hey Bailey, you know you totally messed up my schedule, and you know I'll work with you on that.
Because I'm sure it was me who messed it up.
Yeah, because I was the one. No, but yeah, and some of them are just like, I am just super stressed out in this particular class, and I'm not sure why, and I'm not sure what's going on. Or maybe I think I know why, but we need to have a conversation. So we just have a conversation about those things. There's no set curriculum for these kinds of discussions. Again, you know, yes, I understand some parents feel like, you know, I don't know about this person's having these deep discussions with my kid. Are they indoctrinating them somehow into a certain way of perceiving or believing? For any school counselor that is professionally trained, and we all are, certainly in the state of Minnesota, that's not our approach. Our approach is to listen, and our approach is to remember that the context, the important context is that the parents are the guiding voices. Mm. And so we listen and we kind of hear about what they're working with and help kind of ask questions that really help students discover for themselves what the solutions are and what the what some of the things that they can do to improve their situation is. It's really, when school counseling is done well, it's not us telling them anything. It's us helping students discover how they want to move forward.
Is it, give me a little bit more understanding too of like the higher, I don't know if there's a hierarchy, but like, so you, cause you are, you, okay, there's you and how many others? In the high school, middle school situation.
Yep. In the high school, there are three of us.
How many students?
Oh gosh. Okay. So
way too many for three.
Yeah. I think, so we've got graduating classes of around, well, the last one we had was pretty small. It was like 140, 130. But in the next few years, we're going to be seeing graduating classes of close to 200 and even above.
Sure.
So, you know,
so we're talking
potentially 700 to 800
students,
high school kids
for three people.
Yep. And then we've also got eighth grade as well. So okay. Add another class onto that. So under 1,000,
but none of
between
you,
three,
none of you are psychiatrists. None of you, or are you?
No.
Yeah. No. Nope. And like,
no,
but there
good,
are,
that's a great question,
but there are other, the school doesn't necessarily have those mental health professionals on the payroll, but you are connected with them, correct?
Correct. Like, yeah. And actually we do have mental health practitioners
that work in the school.
Practitioners. Yeah. In the school. I just
wait,
had to think
do we
about
have more than one? Yes.
So yeah, and actually through one of the mental health agencies in Fergus Falls, they're basically on their payroll.
Sure.
But they work within the school building. Which is really awesome because it helps eliminate some of the stigma that occurs when, you know, we have a student who really would benefit from talking to somebody, but parent is sort of on the fence, you know, maybe they haven't had a lot of, maybe they're just sort of weary of having their kids see a mental health specialist. But if they're in the school building, it's super easy and really
it's less disruptive too. Like you don't have to pick them up, leave the building, take them somewhere, wait for an appointment. Like they can just pop up and down. I love that.
So is that something like that you guys can refer to? Like, I mean, so, cause to delineate, so just if people are thinking, cause I think most parents have no idea what guidance counselors are doing.
We're not guidance counselors.
Not guidance counselors. Sorry, counselors, but you are counselors, which is different than a
therapist. They're not prescribing pills.
They're not doing medication or pills or actually a lot of, I mean, it doesn't have to be those.
So that is the big thing. As professional school counselors, we do not provide therapy. That is not something that we
do. That's a good distinction.
Yep. Yeah. But a clinical counselor, a couple of which we have working in the Fergus schools, do that and are really helpful. And we can refer over to them when we need to.
But that's something that, like, so if a kid just drops by and says, "Hey, Bailey, I need to talk about something," that is falls under a umbrella of cone of silence, what did you call it earlier when you're not supposed to say anything?
Confidentiality.
That's the one.
Oh yeah.
But if you were gonna refer a student, say this kid keeps coming back, and you're like, you know what, I think we need to sort of take this to the next level. Yeah. That then you bring the parents are brought in at that point.
Yeah. Totally.
I just want to. It's like there's no secret like therapy pipeline.
Yeah. And you know, and sometimes I have pretty, well, not open, but I mean, like, there's an agree. So I'll often ask students permission to share something with their parents. Sure. And oftentimes they'll be like, yeah, that's cool. You know? Right. And so it actually helps facilitate conversations at home because we can have an open discussion about, hey, this is kind of going on and this is something your kid's dealing with at school. And it really, I think of like school counselors as sort of a gateway in a way, at least for me, like, I really try to help make it easy to talk about mental health. You know, and mental health struggles that their kids might be going through. So that once it becomes easy to talk about, then we can move on to the next level of, hey, maybe that, you know, maybe they need to see a doctor. Maybe they need to see a psychologist. Maybe that, you know, it goes, maybe it goes beyond just general kind of anxiety about math class, you know, so.
Do you think we need like a different, I mean, I hate to complicate things even more, but like, do we need to use a different phraseology than mental health? Cause I feel like mental health has a connotation that something's wrong versus like, and this sounds, I hate buzzwordsy, but like mental wellness, where like,
wellness.
You called it, you talked about whole, like holistic, because like a lot of this stuff, what's really important is not just like, something's wrong, we need to fix it, but developing good habits, strong.
Yeah. Let's get the skills so that we can handle things when there is adversity.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Social and emotional wellness is a really good one.
You can't say social though. We can say wellness.
Yeah. Okay.
We say social, then what?
Why?
Because why not social?
Do you want buy-in from the community so they're not picketing at the thing? We call it socialist, really close to socialist, and then we're reprogramming the kids. And then
you might have something there.
Yeah. There's a whole thing there. Yeah. But
words matter.
no, I think that's really good. And
emotional wellness. I don't know.
Yeah, that would.
I mean, just
that's better. Emotional wellness, mental and emotional.
But
wellness.
You're right about the word. The word mental is is a loaded term.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, if you use it,
and
all
it
by
used
yourself,
to be used very derogatory.
Right.
Yeah.
So mental. Mm-hmm. That was a thing when we were kids.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to shift gears here. Well, because we could talk to him all day.
Yeah, we can.
I don't know if you're aware, but we just went through like a pandemic. We maybe are
Someone
coming out on
that.
The on the back end now. Mm-hmm. And Mike and I have had many conversations about how we feel like this has impacted our kids or our kids' friends or whatever.
Yeah.
What have you seen in terms of an impact on the well-being of these high school students? I think like the high school students that are there right now, have none of them have had a normal high school experience. They've had 2 years or more of disruption and some major disruption. We did, you know, close down for them for a little while here in Minnesota. So like what have you seen the effect of that be? How different is your job now than it was before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has had an impact. There have been some kids that have somehow had the resilience to get through unscathed, I would say.
So there are some.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there are some kids who have a learning style that actually sort of matched up with some of the remote learning that we had to endure for so long. But I do say endure because I would say for most kids, it was not a good experience.
Or teachers, or anyone.
Or anyone, honestly. And man, I guess I don't say that to be selfish or whatever, but I think it was really, it can't be emphasized enough how hard it was on staff.
Yeah.
I mean, it just was so difficult. And part of that was just like the empathy that we felt for our kids, seeing them go through that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think the biggest thing, of course, one of the biggest things was the remote learning. I mean, just being for a kid, you know, being asked to learn in a completely different way and a different style and being at home. I mean, so much for that. I mean, hey, it's great being at home, you know, but for some, it's not so great being at home. And for parents or kids.
Yeah.
So that was very difficult. But so there was that learning piece, just the whole shift in learning, but also just, I don't feel we talk enough about the impact of the actual pandemic. So I think one of the unfortunate aspects is that the pandemic, it pitted us against each other in so many ways, which I think is really sad. But I think whichever side folks were on, it was scary because I don't know many people who don't have a family member or a friend who either passed away or experienced very severe COVID-19. You know, I mean, the numbers are astonishing.
Yeah.
And I just think we forget to talk about that. Like, and I think that sense really was felt by our kids. I think not only did they have to like go home, but it's kind of like, you know, sheltering from a thunderstorm. It's kind of scary, you know, but think about doing that for the better part of a year. and I think we forget to think about that, the impact of just that feeling of unknown. I mean, humans just do not do well with unknown. So there's a constant, not only is it sort of from a thinking perspective, you know, being worried, being concerned, but also from a physiological perspective, because that fight or flight, you know, those chemicals that our brain sends out into our bodies when we're kind of like under attack. I mean, again, kind of a constant stream of that. So I think, unfortunately, you know, it had a physiological impact on us all, particularly kids, I think. And just, you know, dealing with the unknown. And then also, there are so many kids grieving, you know, the loss of a grandparent or the loss of a parent, or the loss of a you know, a close friend. And yeah, it's just really very impactful.
Yeah. I've heard teachers say that they can also see a difference in like emotional development. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, you can see this whole grade missed this year of school because like, they're acting like they're still in this grade or whatever, you know. And I think that's super interesting too, just the development that happens from being in that social setting every day, and how we learn to behave with other people because we're in that setting every day. So just, yes, like you were saying, so many different things that I wouldn't have thought of being affected by this.
That's so a big part of it. You know, you mentioned mainly the social aspect of things. And I really do, like, academics are important. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I do feel for students who are going through these different stages of development at that age, in many cases, the social experiences that they have at school are the most critical aspects of their development. I mean, yes, academics, of course. I mean, you need to proceed kind of at a pace. But at the same time, like, that pace, it's okay for that pace to be adjusted sometimes. And it's okay to not do so well and then maybe do better at one point, you know. So I don't know. But I do feel that those social aspects are really important.
Yeah.
Do you think, so now in our school district during this pandemic, this last calendar year was functionally relatively normal. And what I mean by that is we were in person.
Yeah.
We had all the things. Nobody wore masks. Well, most people don't wear masks. Anyway, that's a whole thing. Like, so how do you see, like, I guess what am I trying to wonder? Like, so we're a whole year in sort of, I don't want to call it post-pandemic, but it's sort of post-pandemic, quasi-post-pandemic.
Yeah. You're kind of asking, are we back to normal?
No, like, how was that trajectory? Like, do you, like, when you're working with kids, was it palpable from the beginning of the year to the end of the year that they were making progress in these things? Or is it like, nope, this is 5 years, you know,
super stunted, or they're just
wrecked.
Like,
they're just wrecked forever. Well, I mean, my kids but that's my fault.
Yes, exactly.
Sometimes it feels like
oh, crap.
Unfixable.
Yeah. You know, I think we're recovering. We are not back to normal because it just doesn't feel normal yet. Kids are really still struggling because of falling behind in academics.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But again, I feel like they've also fallen behind in the social aspects. I mean, that was almost a full year of a totally different social situation. Mm-hmm. And just loneliness, you know? I mean, so whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, it's still, you know, that is extreme, being having to work from home like that. I think we're, like, this year, definitely, technically, it was a normal year.
Yeah.
But at the beginning of the year, we had a significant surge of cases. Yeah. And so, you know, we were definitely dealing with that. We were still contact tracing, all of those things. Teachers were still making significant accommodations. I guess maybe that's one of the kind of telltale things is how much are teachers having to accommodate just kind of being behind in learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're still having to do that. I think they're still having to cut down some of their curriculum a little bit more to the basics because of students being behind.
I'm only laughing. That's a whole nother show because one of the reasons that we started talking about this or doing a series like this is that we both came out of, you know, we have middle schoolers and high schoolers. And it came out of this year as like, this was a really rough year.
Yep.
And a lot of it we felt was like trying to shift the gear back into normal
plus
faster
catch up.
than was
than the kids were ready for
whatever it was. It was just really rough.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to hear that from your perspective, teachers were working really hard, and I don't want to throw teachers under the bus because they're amazing. But
and not every teacher handled it the same. So like it wasn't across
that's
the board
correct.
Either.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna love this thread and I could sit and pull on it all day long. But like, do you see a long-term impact here. I know, like, you know, initially colleges were like, there's going to be grace for this. And, you know, like, we don't need test scores and we don't, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. As these kids now, like, it's a whole generation, right? Like, mm-hmm. do you see a long term, like, oh, maybe 5 years from now we'll catch up, but the whole system is going to accommodate this blip mm-hmm. for a while? Or, like, how does that play out, do you think?
Wow, this is such a complicated question. You know, mainly because colleges have been going through change in what their role even is.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, our industry
yeah.
around the world has changed.
Yep.
And the role of colleges has changed. Back in the 90s when I went to college, I mean, it just felt different. It was like, oh, you know, you graduate with a bachelor's degree and bang, you know, no problem getting a job. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the same. Mm-hmm. So that's very different. I mean, yeah, I can point to things like the ACT. You know, colleges just really aren't using the ACT anymore, honestly. I would say 50% of colleges have just gotten rid of that requirement. Kind of the pandemic triggered that, but that I think it was kind of a long time.
Yeah, that was that was on the way.
Yeah,
yeah, it was on the way out.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about a lot of things in terms of the expense of college right now. You know, it's like something's gonna have to happen there too.
But I guess just like, so we, like Mike was saying, this was kind of like a more normal year, just that we were in class. But we are definitely still seeing an impact on teachers and on students and on, like, obviously in your profession. And also, like, what do we do? How hard do we push? Whatever. And I guess just, like, is it a permanent thing? Like Mike was saying, like, is the damage just done? Or, like, can these kids recover these years?
I think colleges definitely understand I mean, they have to. They have to make money,
that's
right?
That's what I was about to say. Colleges understand tuition. Okay.
Understand.
So, like, they'll the figure it out.
Need to make money.
Yeah. No, ultimately they need to make money, which is a good thing, because they do need to be in tune with what what students need and what our industries need out of students. When it comes to admission, for example, you know, I think they're looking at students through the lens of the pandemic and the lens of what they could actually achieve and experience during that time. Because you're right. I mean, for kids graduating now, that was a huge part of their high school experience. Mm-hmm. So I think colleges have been able to be flexible in terms of admissions. And again, I keep thinking, oh, well, they got to make money, you know. It's like,
yeah.
But so
I'm a big proponent of just like everybody gets a pass, because I know you did a good job doing lip service to, like, the kids have to do academics and learn things. But the fact of the matter is if you deleted 2 years of any of your education, as long as you come out with some of those mental wellness and social skills,
critical thinking,
you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Because it really doesn't matter, and I'm glad my kids don't listen.
We are helping to not point or guide.
Yes.
But we are definitely, as school counselors, you know, the 2-year technical education is an incredibly viable option. In fact, I would say, I mean, way more students are doing that, are approaching it that way than college. That is a significant shift. And I would say kind of goes along with the shift from the term guidance counselor to the term professional school counselor. That the 4-year college is not the gold standard necessarily anymore. It just isn't.
okay, I'm gonna get, I got two more things, and then we got to like wrap it up. Yeah. They just led me to another thing, which I don't know. Tammy, you tell me how you feel about this. You say you don't do much guidance stuff. Where do the kids get? My kids have been hammered with the taking assessment tests. What are you going to do with your life? Like in their sophomore,
freshman
era, mm-hmm. where like to some degree producing some fairly sizable anxiety mm-hmm. about like, we have to make, we got to know what we're doing and we have to make a choice. And I'm sure that part of that is my fault, to completely honest, because that sounds like something I would say. Yep. That's not coming out of the guy. That doesn't come out of the counselor. That's coming out of a different, if it's not in your wheelhouse, then we won't blame you. We can move on.
No, I mean,
there's a class, right?
It's all, like, yeah. So students here in Fergus Falls, they have, in junior year, they have a class called Financial and Life Management. That's where they...
Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah, that's where they go through a lot of that.
Sorry, teacher. It was horrible.
Wow.
To each their own. To each their own.
Also, my son took an assessment of this nature as a freshman. I think it was like in a family and consumer science type of class.
That was freshman,
yep. Yeah. And he was told that he is cut out to be a tour guide.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, P.S. Please get a new assessment. But anyway, yes.
Yeah. So honestly though, okay. Yes. Sorry. Those assessments go back into history
and they
really, we do still have students take those assessments because sometimes it can be insightful. The most important aspect of those is to share with the students that they have the opportunity to take them over and over again. Honestly, it's going to change.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They're going to do it 3 weeks later and it's going to change. I mean, that's just the way it is. But some of them offer some insights. It's a balance. I mean, it's important, you know, it's important to the students. It's important to the community that students, graduate having some kind of plan, you know, that they're at least thinking about certain things and have been exposed to different experiences and have documented those experiences and have a learning plan. So they know how they learn, they know how they know what some of their interests are. So I do believe that plan is important, but again, using the word holistic, it's gotta be considered in context. And I think some families feel like, oh, you know, the school is really pushing this or pushing that. I really don't think that's the goal. I think that it sometimes is perceived that way. But I think that it's much more intentionally inclusive and holistic. I keep using that word than is perceived.
Do you think that the schools have made the shift away from like when we were in K-12? I mean, I remember multiple years of school hearing you have to get a bachelor's degree, you have to get a four-year degree.
I feel like they've shifted.
Yeah? They've definitely shifted.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Good.
Now you don't even go to college anymore. Nobody goes.
Stop it. That's my job.
Well, it's funny because there are more kids, like more... students, you know, taking a gap year or whatever.
Ugh. But honestly, there we go.
Okay, so this Scrap is a whole nother topic. Year. I never said that.
Yeah, gap year, good or bad, up that. Or down, apologies. Bailey approved or not Bailey approved.
Depends on the student.
Oh, jeez. You have to take a holistic approach to this thing. Yeah, and
some students can take it. Depends on where they're at in their lifetime development. Yeah.
Okay, I got one more and then I'll stop, but also this maybe this will cross into some place you don't want to talk about. Okay, so one of the things that I feel, especially in recent news cycles, so this might get a little political, when we talk about mental health and we talk about needing more mental health, I'm doing air quotes again, like in schools, it has been...
Yeah, we're still not sure whether that's the right
term. I don't know if that's the right term, whatever it is. It has been surrounding school shootings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. So I'm just sort of curious, is that like, do you guys get training? I mean, like, and I'm two things that I'm sort of needling at here is one, I'm just sort of interested from a counselor's perspective, you know, professional, licensed person. What is it that you guys do for to like look for that, but also prepare for, like, what do you do surrounding around that? But also to, I think that you do, and I sort of want people to understand that, like, this is a thing we're devoting time to.
Oh yeah.
And I would like to just sort of know a little bit more about that.
Yeah. No, I think the most important thing is that, and I'm just speaking for school counselors and teachers as well. So we're constantly training. We're going to trainings. We're going to conferences that specifically address those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So we're made aware of the most current recent research and
teaching.
On these topics. You know, the biggest thing I think is, as counselors, we're trained, as school counselors, we're trained to see red flags. And to be able to notice things that may be pretty obvious, honestly, indicators of some trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I think initially, I honestly haven't been following the Uvalde thing very much. I just kind of have been taking a little bit of a news hiatus. But I think initially they were like, oh, well, he didn't have any documented mental health or whatever. You know, my sense there, and not to, I guess I'm throwing in sort of an opinion on this, but I will anyway. I mean, my sense there is I'm sure there were plenty of red flags that should have been seen.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, so there's that training piece. There's kind of the watching for red flags piece, and the reporting piece. I mean, so one of our tenets as school counselors is that if there's like, and this is a reason to breach confidentiality too, with parents or a trusted adult, if there's any safety issue, a safety concern, that gets shared with a parent or another adult. That's just the way that works. Students know that when they go into conversations with school counselors, we tell them, here are the parameters here are the reasons for why we would break our confidentiality. Mm-hmm. So it's so important. So there are very specific reporting processes. You know, if we think a kid's being abused or neglected, there's a process for that, and kids know about that. So I guess now I'm wondering if I'm getting to the answer of your question.
Well, so you touched on like that you do training and stuff for identifying problem or potential issues. I'm assuming you also do training though to like help counsel kids through an event like something like this, or is that outside of your wheelhouse?
Honestly, that's kind of just a natural part of. I mean, that would go back to our training that we did for our master's degree.
Sure.
I mean, that's kind of counseling 101, working with kids that are dealing with grief, you know, anxiety about, you know, things going on in the news.
Do you see an impact in students with like just them having to go through the drills for like active shooter type situations? Do you see like, is that having a stressful impact on students, especially, you know, when situations actually happen in our news stories?
You know, I can't say because we haven't really had active shooter drills.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you call them?
And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Okay.
When you do the code red, code yellow lockdowns, that's not what that is.
Well, so those are. We do have the. Okay. So we do.
Them out into two different categories.
So we have the code. We've never had a code red drill. Sure. Everyone knows what code red means, and generally. Students are our latest training has been run, hide, fight. It's very simple. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And students and staff know that's what the response is if there is an act, you know, and it right, you're kind of laughing. It's very simplistic, and the reason it's simplistic is because, and this is my belief, mm-hmm. I believe that the reason it's simplistic is because those situations, you know, are very scary, mm-hmm. and your reactions to things are going to go to their most primal, the roots of our brain development.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? And run, hide, fight.
I was going to say, it's just what you're going to do anyway.
Yeah. You are, but you would be amazed at how many people
freeze,
hide first.
Oh, sure.
And that's not the right.
No.
You know, because you want to run, even if you might potentially be, I mean, obviously you'd want to make sure the hall was clear or but you might, you know, I mean, we're getting into details here and scary details, but that's kind of,
So we don't do those drills.
No, you know, here. I think not the dramatic ones that some people see in the media. And I think that there are many states who do those drills, but there is a significant body of research of which I really haven't looked into that much, but I know there is one that exists about the impact of those drills on students.
Negative, I would assume.
Yep,
yeah.
Right. Okay. Yep.
So it's just like the pandemic. Eventually, it'll just be part of whatever it is, and the kids are fine.
Ultimately,
puke.
Yeah. We all know the best ways to get out of the building. We have teachers are very specifically trained in what they need to do to keep their kids safe in the event of a school shooting. Teachers know exact. They've got an emergency handbook. Basically, they become the leaders of their class, and they make the determinations and guide their students through whatever process they need to go through in order to be safe.
I can't stop asking questions.
I know. Let's pay them money.
I want to know. Like, so how does it when you're doing these trainings? And when you hear like about a school shooting and then people are automatically like, oh, we need more like mental health in school.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel as a professional and as a person? Because I can tell you how it would make me feel. But
when they say we need more mental health in school or
when a tragedy like this happens and the pivot goes, I mean, essentially.
Where were the counselors?
Where were the police, if we have, because we still do have resource officers in our school, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where were they? Why wasn't the door locked? Also, Nate Bailey, why didn't you catch this?
Yeah, totally. And, no, that's a great.
Like, how does that make you feel?
Yeah.
Really good, I can tell, because the beard stroking has come out.
It yeah. Yeah, I'm really going for it. It makes me feel sad, honestly. That's how it makes me feel. I think that systems are complicated and that's, it's so, you know, now I'm imagining the Uvalde thing, you know, and so many of the accusations of the police not making the right choices and all of those things. But I wasn't there and I, you know, but how do we know? How do we know exactly what was going through the minds of responders? And you know, as to kind of the comment about, well, we need, you know, where was the school counselor? How do they not see this? Okay, keeping it simple. Mm-hmm. There are too many students for school counselors to be able to work with. That is the way it is across the nation. And actually, in Minnesota, it is one of the worst states in the nation for counselor to student
ratio.
We've got about one counselor for every 750 students in Minnesota.
So Fergus is doing well.
Fergus is doing very well.
We're three times better than
one counselor for roughly every 400 students.
Which is crap. Which is crap. But yeah.
You know, the like our the American School Counselor Association recommends one counselor for every 250 students. There are states like North Dakota that have mandates. No one likes to hear the word mandates, but they have ratio mandates, so they do have roughly 250 to 1, sometimes 300 to 1.
Super interesting.
Yeah.
This is a very interesting comparison, North Dakota versus Minnesota with that. Yeah.
One of the few areas.
Said systems are complicated.
Yeah. one of the few areas, you know, and of course, North Dakota is a more generally conservative state, and
but this
logic
is,
wouldn't tell you that that would be the case, but there you go. There you have it.
There you have it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, so
I'm going to stop. I'm done.
Nope, we have to ask one more question because you put a question on here and it's really good. What can parents or, you know, other caregivers do to help?
Yeah.
How can we support the role of the school counselor?
That is a great question. Listen to your kids. That's, I think, one of the most difficult. Yeah.
Write that down.
I'm writing it down.
Oh, listen, really?
Okay.
No, that is one of the most difficult things to do as a parent because we want to react pretty much to so many of our situations and sort of like, with our kids. But listening, active listening really involves kind of what we're doing in this radio show. I mean, you guys are actively listening to what I'm saying right now, and it's really just allowing yourself to process what your kid is telling you and to even ask them about what feelings are associated, and this is getting into the cheesy counselor stuff, but you know, what feelings are associated with what they're thinking about and validating their feelings. So this doesn't mean like, oh, just let your kid walk all over you. That's not what it is. It's really just giving them the time and space to be able to share with you what they're feeling and thinking, and maybe being able to say, yeah, I can understand why you'd feel that way, or something as simple as like, hey, I hear you. And then if you have something to say about it that you feel would be helpful or helping guide them, because you are their parent, then you can proceed with saying that. But give them a chance to talk first. And validate their feelings. Yeah, I hear you. So those kinds of things. That's just, I just think that's the most critical thing. Kids feel like, the kids that come to me just feel like they're not being heard. And their friends aren't real great at it, at listening. You know, they come to us with stuff. Yeah.
All right.
I like it.
Well, thank you very much. We could,
we
probably will, but
so many more
we
questions.
Could continue on this forever and ever.
Yeah, no, this is a really exciting conversation, and I'm glad you guys had me here.
Sweet. All right. Well, thanks for coming.
Yep. Thanks.
So we just finished our conversation with the incredible Nate Bailey. Incredible Nate Bailey. And
interesting story. I did not expect all of the twists and turns in his life story.
Yeah.
That was interesting. So anyway.
Also, I'm glad that he has decided that he's not a 7-year guy anymore and he's going to stick around for a little bit. So
forever.
That's good.
Forever. Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts about mental health in schools or like?
I have so many thoughts about mental health in schools. Yes.
Or mental wellness or whatever
mental wellness.
Else you're working on.
We need to workshop a new.
Yeah. New title.
Term for sure. Yes. I would love to see far more counselors in our schools so that we can like improve that ratio. Especially as you were talking about like instances where, you know, there were red flags that, you know, could maybe be missed. Like, let's have more access for these kids who have things that they need help with to be able to go. I know that like sometimes when you are, especially in small communities, when you're looking for an appointment for a kid to get mental health
services
of any kind, it can be months of a waiting list.
Yeah.
And so this is just one place where we could have those resources available and we could be doing this much better. So hats off to North Dakota, which I
Yeah, that
don't
was
know.
A surprise to me.
That was very surprising to me.
And I was disappointed in Minnesota that we suck so bad at our ratios of, I blame Democrats because they've been in charge for a long, long time. And
except for only half.
Well, yeah. I mean, they, yeah. anyway, so it's all the, it's
Fix
all your
it.
Guys' fault.
Fix it, Minnesota. And
yeah.
everyone else in the nation.
I think that, what was I going to say about that?
I don't know. You had a lot of three things lists today. So
I
like,
did.
I feel like there should be three things here.
I think that we should have more mental health curriculum services, whatever it is. I mean, that it should be one of sort of the like, and I think it somewhat is, but maybe even more intentionally, that mental and emotional wellness, social and emotional wellness does need to be part of what we're doing when we're educating our kids.
Yeah.
And not just to check. So like, that's what a part of we talked about at the end there is about like people's response to Uvalde and like school shootings that we need to have more mental health in schools. That's true, but we need to have it in there to help the kids, not because this is, should be the first line of defense against, massacres.
Yes.
And I think everybody should go to, I've talked about it several times. I've been going to therapy. It's great.
Yes.
Everybody should do it in some way, shape or form. Mm-hmm. Cause it's just, we as adults, just like when we talked about with Nate, partnering with parents, partnering with the professionals, it helps to have somebody who is a pro, but also who is outside of your, regular sphere.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really good.
It is good.
I'm glad that Nate is in our community and,
Yeah. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed it. Nice. All right. We're going to wrap it up. I'm real quick. Do you have a
Super quick because I didn't have anything.
Oh, good. The FDA and the CDC have approved a vaccine for little kids. So it is going to be available almost everywhere this week. Not in Florida. They didn't want it. But
I thought they ordered it again later they said they were the last
one. A clip from him last night. Whatever. Just, you know, if you're in Florida, it might be a little more tricky. But anywhere else, little kids, you cannot get vaccinated. This is great. I'm so tired. I think we've said this 100 million times. Mm-hmm. I'm so tired of talking about anything related to the pandemic, but it's still here. This is one more step toward, like, let's move on or move out of it.
Yep.
So this is great. And I know a lot of parents, I don't have kids in this age group anymore, but a lot of parents were still concerned about their little kids and limiting activity because of this. Now you have it. It's great.
Yeah. It's nice.
It is nice.
I did actually see this one and I almost put it down, but I literally did the same thing you did, which was, I'm so tired of talking about vaccines and the pandemic. I'm not even going to put this one down.
Oh, see?
Also because a whole bunch of people will probably be pissed. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's nice. That's nice. Well, there you have it. Another episode of Flyover Logic.
This is Mike and Tammy saying that even if you don't have time to land here, we're glad you found time to listen.